Chapter 19. Nothing to lead up to. It never played, or skipped, or smiled. Once, the idea occurred to me that it was an automaton, and that the personage had made it. But following the strange couple out one Sunday, I heard the personage say to it, £13,000, apostrophe to which it added in a weak human voice, 17 and 4 pence. Apostrophe 4 Sundays I followed them out, and this is all I ever heard or saw them say. One Sunday, I followed them home. They lived behind a pump, and the personage opened their abode with an exceeding large key. The one solitary inscription on their house related to a fire plug. The house was partly undermined by a deserted and closed gateway, its windows were blind with dirt, and it stood with its face disconsolately turned to a wall. 5 great churches and 2 small ones rang their Sunday bells between this house and the church the couple frequented, so they must have had some special reason for going a quarter of a mile to it. The last time I saw them was on this wise. I had been to explore another church at a distance, and happened to pass the church they frequented at about 2 of the afternoon, when that edifice was closed. But a little side door, which I had never observed before, stood open, and disclosed certain cellarous steps. Method they are airing the vaults today, apostrophe when the personage and the child silently arrived at the steps, and silently descended. Of course, I came to the conclusion that the personage had at last despaired of the looked-for return of the penitent citizens, and that he and the child went down to get themselves buried. In the course of my pilgrimages I came upon one obscure church which had broken out in the melodramatic style, and was got up with various tawdry decorations, much after the manner of the extinct London Maypoles. These attractions had induced several young priests or deacons in black bibs for waistcoats, and several young ladies interested in that holy order, the proportion being, as I estimated, 17 young ladies to a deacon, to come into the city as a new and odd excitement. It was wonderful to see how these young people played out their little play in the heart of the city, all among themselves, without the deserted cities knowing anything about it. It was as if you should take an empty counting house on a Sunday, and act one of the old mysteries there. They had impressed a small school, from what neighborhood I don't know, to assist in the performances, and it was pleasant to notice frantic garlands of inscription on the walls, especially addressing those poor innocents in characters impossible for them to decipher. There was a remarkably agreeable smell of pomatum in this congregation. But, in other cases, rot and mildew and dead citizens form the uppermost scent, while, infused into it in a dreamy way not at all displeasing, was the staple character of the neighborhood. In the churches about Mark Lane, for example, there was a dry whiff of wheat, and I accidentally struck an airy sample of barley out of an aged hassock in one of them. From Rood Lane to Tower Street, and thereabouts, there was often a subtle flavor of wine, sometimes, of tea. One church near Mincing Lane smelt like a druggist's drawer. Behind the monument the service had a flavor of damaged oranges, which, a little further down towards the river, tempered into herrings, and gradually toned into a cosmopolitan blast of fish. In one church, the exact counterpart of the church in The Rake's Progress, where the hero is being married to the horrible old lady, there was no speciality of atmosphere, until the organ shook a perfume of hides all over us from some adjacent warehouse. Be the scent what it would, however, there was no speciality in the people. There were never enough of them to represent any calling or neighborhood. They had all gone elsewhere overnight, and the few stragglers in the many churches languished there inexpressively. Among the uncommercial travels in which I have engaged, this year of Sunday travel occupies its own place, apart from all the rest. whether I think of the church, where the sails of the oyster boats in the river almost flapped against the windows, or of the church, where the railroad made the bells hum as the train rushed by above the roof, I recall a curious experience. On summer Sundays, in the gentle rain or the bright sunshine either, deepening the idleness of the idle city I have sat, in that singular silence which belongs to resting places usually astir, in scores of buildings at the heart of the world's metropolis, unknown to far greater numbers of people speaking the English tongue, than the ancient edifices of the Eternal City, or the pyramids of Egypt. The dark vestries and registries into which I have peeped, and the little hemmed-in churchyards that have echoed to my feet, have left impressions on my memory as distinct and quaint as any it has in that way received. In all those moldy registers that the worms are eating, there is not a line but made some hearts leap, or some tears flow, in their day. Still and dry now, still and dry. And the old tree at the window with no room for its branches, has seen them all out. So with the tomb of the old master of the old company, on which it drips. His son restored it and died, his daughter restored it and died, and then he had been remembered long enough, and the tree took possession of him, and his name cracked out. There are few more striking indications of the changes of manners and customs that 200 or 300 years have brought about than these deserted churches. Many of them are handsome and costly structures. Several of them were designed by Wren. Many of them arose from the ashes of the great fire. Others of them outlived the plague and the fire to die a slow death in these later days. No one can be sure of the coming time. But it is not too much to say of it, that it has no sign in its outsetting tides, of the reflux to these churches of their congregations and uses. They remain like the tombs of the old citizens who lie beneath them and around them, monuments of another age. They are worth a Sunday exploration, now and then, for they yet echo, not unharmoniously, to the time when the city of London really was London. When the prentices and trained bands were of mark in the state, when even the Lord Mayor himself was a reality, not a fiction conventionally bepuffed on one day in the year by illustrious friends, who no less conventionally laugh at him on the remaining 364 days. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.